Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
So will Eric Schneiderman be the one to prosecute the banks over subprime loans? We'll have our first visit now since he took office in January with the new New York State Attorney General, Eric Schneiderman, following Andrew Cuomo and Elliot Spitzer in the high-profile top cop job. We'll talk about Schneiderman's investigation of Wall Street for making so many bad mortgage loans, his lawsuit against Washington for more information about fracking, his constitutional challenge to the Defense of Marriage Act, and more. Full disclosure, as I've mentioned before, when he was on as a candidate, his father, Irwin Schneiderman, is a longtime member of the WNYC Board of Trustees and a major donor to the station. I used to say Senator Schneiderman when you represented Manhattan in the legislature, so now it's Attorney General Schneiderman. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. Good to be here.
And I want to jump right in on your investigation of the mortgage lenders, because a lot of people in our audience are waiting to see if anyone will go to prison for the systemic failures in the financial crisis, and in general to see if the lenders will be held anywhere near as accountable as all these families suffering under foreclosure for the deals that lender and borrower made together. Tell us about the nature of your investigation.
Well, we're investigating from two sides. We're really looking at it from the point of view of the abuse of borrowers, the abuse of homeowners, which there's been a fair amount of publicity about, robo-signing efforts to foreclose when, in fact, the entity foreclosing doesn't have the right documents or doesn't have title. And we're also looking at the investor side. So we really know what happened. It's a question of digging in on the facts and establishing accountability and really taking these matters to court, which we're moving towards as rapidly as I can. But it's clear that as of 2004, when interest rates started to go up, that the incentive for lots of people to take out mortgages based on the fact that, you know, housing prices were going up and it was tough times for the middle class really diminished. Interest rates went up, and any, you know, regular operation of market forces should have led for there to be, you know, a lessening of the number of people taking out mortgages. We know that the mortgages kept being dished out, and what was driving it in part was the desire to get pools of mortgages, most of which were placed in New York Trust, which is why I have a particular interest in this. But the mortgages kept being issued, and mortgage-backed securities, which were pools of mortgages, kept being sold to investors. And in our examination, I think it's, you know, I don't want to talk about the details, but it's unassailable that the portion of mortgages that were really sketchy loans, you could say, negative amortization mortgages where you owe more every month, interest-only mortgages, no documentation mortgages, that the portion of the market that was that were really these questionable loans went way up, and the securities became more and more questionable. They started issuing what's called collateralized debt obligations instead of regular mortgage-backed securities, which were much more opaque. And we're looking at, you know, the people who mutual funds, pension funds, and others who bought the bad securities, and we're looking at the homeowners who were stuck with the bad loans. Mm-hmm. So we're hoping to pursue it from both ends and follow the facts wherever they lead us.
Now, defenders of the bank say it was a massive failure of judgment to make all these loans that turned out to be bad, and the higher percentage of those risky kinds, as you were just describing, and then to invent all these exotic credit default swap bundles and everything as if they were safe bets. But bad investments aren't against the law. Being stupid and blind isn't against the law. So what specific laws are you focusing on to see if they were violated?
Well, you know, in New York we have what's probably the most powerful securities law in the country, the Martin Act. They're also, as New York State Attorney General, I can pursue federal laws. And there are also laws against general business fraud that are part of our investigation. You're right. Making a mistake is not against the law. But if you're doing something over and over again and there's internal feedback saying, this looks pretty bad, are we sure we want to do this? And things are being brought to you where internally there are a lot of questions being raised and you go ahead anyway. For 6 months or a year, that's one thing. But from 2004 to 2005 to 2006, by 2006, I think, you know, it seems as though someone should have known that there were real problems accruing and developing. And we're pursuing the investigation. We have not, you know, we're not at the point of suing anyone or much less indicting anyone, but we're taking a very deep look and following the facts. We're not, you know, we're not out to hurt anybody, but we're not out to protect anybody. Public confidence, Brian, in the markets has suffered very badly. So this is not a matter of being punitive. I mean, I used to spend a long time practicing law, was a securities lawyer, represented a lot of folks on Wall Street. This is a matter of restoring public confidence. People do not believe that there's one set of rules for everyone in, on Wall Street anymore. We have to restore that confidence for the markets to get going. And as you can see, the housing markets are still paralyzed by the overhang from this disaster.
New York State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, let me stay on this a little more. There have been New York Times and Rolling Stone magazine pieces intended to lay out a blueprint for prosecutors on how to go after the banks on criminal grounds. In the New York Times in April, for example, Gretchen Morgenson and Louise Story laid out a few scenarios like, quote, failure of executives to fully disclose the scope of their risks on their books during the mortgage mania, or the amounts of questionable loans that they bundled into securities sold to investors that soured, or executives knowingly awarding bonuses to themselves and colleagues based on overly optimistic valuations of mortgage assets, in effect creating illusory profits, or misleading regulators and their own boards about looming problems. Merrill Lynch, for example, they say, understated its risky mortgage holdings by hundreds of billions of dollars. So are you following any of those trails in particular?
Well, look, it's the job of good journalists to raise issues, and it's a job of good prosecutors to follow the facts and see if first of all, if there's any basis for it, and second of all, if you can prove it in court. So we're pursuing all angles and following the evidence wherever it leads. I don't want to comment on the specifics of the investigation, but we're working on it diligently. We've established a cooperation agreement, a partnership with Attorney General Beau Biden from Delaware, again, because the trusts that where all these mortgages were deposited were either New York trusts, which is true in the overwhelming majority of the cases, or Delaware trusts, and we are both digging in on this, and we're following all the facts.
There was an article in Crane's New York Business last week that raised the question of how sincere you are about actually prosecuting banks rather than making a show of it for people demanding it, then not doing anything. Crane said, quote, the hard-charging, labor-backed, Upper West Side liberal ran to the left to win the Democratic primary for attorney general, but business's fears about Mr. Schneiderman have proved unfounded so far. In his first 7 months in the office, the Democrat has cultivated the image of a measured pragmatist rather than the lefty juggernaut he channeled on the campaign trail. During his appearances, Harvard-educated Mr. Schneiderman, 56, plays up his business bona fides. Mr. Schneiderman also touts his years as a partner at Kirkpatrick and Lockhart, where he represented Merrill Lynch, J.H. Whitney & Company, and the New York Stock Exchange. So that little Valentine from the Crane's business magazine. So who are you really on this stuff?
Well, actually, I just have to say it was the American Stock Exchange, not the New York Stock Exchange.
Okay.
But look, I think that what we're seeing here is this frame that has been accepted by much of the public that you can't be a pragmatic, smart, diligent follower of the facts and still come from a progressive point of view. I just reject that. I mean, I can be a good prosecutor, be a responsible prosecutor and a good lawyer. I'm not proceeding based on some ideology, which I think is the wrong way to approach law enforcement, but I am prepared to follow the facts wherever they lead and hold anyone accountable. And I think, you know, look, time will demonstrate that I'm serious about this, but I think that it's interesting that the framework that's being presented is that you're either a liberal or you are prudent and practical and honest and act with care and respect economic reality. I think you can be both.
Before we get off housing.
And in fact, I would argue that it's the other side that refuses to respect economic reality at this point in our history.
There's another track going on at the same time, which is all 50 state AGs working on a nationwide negotiated settlement with the banks. You have a role in that?
Yes. We've been involved in that throughout, and there are ongoing efforts to see if something can be worked out. I don't know if that's going to come to fruition or not, but there have been discussions. There were discussions before I took office. They started last September. So I inherited this ongoing set of negotiations, and they're still going on.
If there is a settlement, how much money might that be for, and who would actually get the money? Can foreclosed-on homeowners get it to live somewhere else?
I don't really want to comment because this is an ongoing negotiation, and term sheets are going back and forth. So there's no agreement as of yet, but certainly I would like to see substantial relief for the folks who are in what they call underwater homes now, where the value of the property is less than the value of the mortgage, who particularly who got mortgages at the end of this cycle, at the end of the bubble. But none of that has been determined yet as that negotiation goes forward. I would also note that one of the major factors is the data came out recently showing the huge gap, the wealth gap between African-American and Hispanic New Yorkers and Americans and white Americans. A lot of that was attributable to the fact that people lost substantially all of their assets when their assets were tied up in their homes. And that's something that was really not focused on in that particular series of stories. But the mortgage-backed securities crisis and the subprime loans are very much related to this increased gap in wealth.
All right. New York State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, let's touch on some other things. You are suing the federal government for more environmental data on fracking, the natural gas drilling technique that's so controversial in New York and elsewhere. Why the lawsuit?
With fracking, as with really everything we're working on, we are just trying to get all the evidence out so that the policymakers and the public can see it. This is not a lawsuit that says we shouldn't do fracking or we should do fracking. It's challenging the Army Corps of Engineers and a group of federal agencies who have all waive sovereign immunity and are subject to this kind of litigation to follow the National Environmental Policy Act, which requires them to do a study. They are saying they're not required to follow the National Environmental Policy Act. We say they do. They're saying they have sovereign immunity. We say they don't, so we're litigating it. But it's really just about requiring them to do their job. I mean, it's one thing to make a determination. It's another thing to say we refuse to even do a study so that we have all the facts. And the significance of this is that the Delaware River Basin Commission, which includes these agencies, covers an area that goes beyond New York State, in New Jersey and Pennsylvania areas that are right on the edge of New York City's watershed and other important parts of the state. So we think it's important for them to follow the law and do a full environmental assessment.
Sovereign immunity is a fascinating concept, isn't it? I mean, does it go so far as what I've read that nobody can sue the federal government over its policies without its own consent?
It's not quite that simple, but yes, in many cases, you require a waiver from a federal agency before you can sue them. And you know, this has its roots way back in the early stages of the Republic, but there was a tremendous fear because we had a very weak federal government at the outset that the federal government would be crippled by this kind of litigation, and this was, at the time, a big breakthrough. But this goes back to fights between the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists, Brian, so it precedes even your and my time discussing these issues.
Even your and my time. The feds are fighting back on this fracking suit by saying New York State has no standing to sue because you can't prove any actual injury to the state that has actually taken place. Do you have a counterargument?
Oh, sure. And again, this is all being done in court and in discussions between counsel. But it is clear that their decision not to follow the Environmental Policy Act is ripe for review. That's what we're challenging. It's not. We're not saying, oh, you know, there are wells that are exploding or anything. That's not the point of the lawsuit. The point of the lawsuit is for them to conduct a thorough study. They have clearly made a determination that they're refusing to abide by the National Environmental Policy Act. They said explicitly it doesn't apply, and we're challenging that determination. It's really a suit more about getting out the facts and making sure that these agencies comply with what we believe the law, and we believe we can prove is the law. The issues like fracking, issues that relate to same sort of issues relating to nuclear power, my office's posture has been, first and foremost, let's make sure everything is out in the open. Let's get all of the facts out. Let's make sure all of the facts are taken into account. We're very big on evidence-based practices and evidence-based decision-making, and that's really what the thread that unites all these cases.
And you have challenged the constitutionality of the Federal Defense of Marriage Act, which blocks legally gay married couples in New York and other states from getting federal benefits like Social Security survivor benefits or having other states required to recognize the unions as they must with other marriages. What are your constitutional grounds?
The challenge to DOMA is a very straightforward equal protection case. I mean, the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution clearly requires equal protection of the law for all citizens. And under DOMA, people who are legally married in the state of New York, pursuant to our laws that were lawfully passed, and I'm defending cases challenging our marriage equality law also, but I'm confident we'll prevail. This is the law in New York. People who get married in New York, their marriages are not treated equally to marriages from other states. They're not treated equally by the federal government. I think it's a very straightforward violation of equal protection. And it also is really a, I think, a very important statement that New York, you know, New Yorkers in New York State, we're allowed, there's certain areas that we're allowed to make decisions that are really are the traditional province of the states. And there is case law and Supreme Court statements going back hundreds of years saying that marriage is something that is a state issue. And really, I'm just suing to say my state has passed a marriage equality law. We are entitled to the same respect and the same equal treatment as the marriages from every other state.
It sounds like a U.S. Supreme Court case on a fundamental constitutional issue like that. Where will you get your hearing?
Well, it's we've filed, really joined in as amicus, a case that's already pending because this is one of, I think, two cases that probably are going all the way up through the courts. And so we're going to be joining with the plaintiffs and others who are have come on as amicus. And you're right, this is something that is going to go pretty far up. But I do think it is as clear a violation of the Equal Protection Clause as you could see. I mean, it's, if you're married in New York State and you go to another state, they have to respect that marriage. And if you're married in New York State, but you're not denied Social Security benefits that are made available to people who are married in another state, that's a violation of your right to equal protection under the law.
We're almost out of time with New York State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman. Anything else you want to mention that you're up to as AG that I didn't bring up?
We've been very active and taking a couple of major initiatives in the area of public integrity because, you know, as I mentioned, public confidence in the private sector, particularly financial services, has suffered badly. But public confidence in the public sector, particularly the state government of New York, has also suffered badly. And as I campaigned around the state, it was clear to me that when it comes to the government, the trust bank is empty. So we have ratcheted up our public integrity efforts, expanded our jurisdiction, expanded the Medicaid Fraud Control Unit, created a new unit that for the first time in New York, a taxpayer protection unit to go after contractors other than Medicaid contractors who rip off the state, tens of billions of dollars in contracts, and we're now policing it. And we've expanded the public integrity function and appointed regional office directors, public integrity officers in every one of our 13 regional offices. And this has gotten a tremendous response. I mean, the public wants to know that the police are on the beat and they've really lost. They feel that there's not one set of rules for public officials and one set of rules for them. They feel that there's a double standard for bankers, but also for elected officials. And you know, as someone who is a believer in the public sector as a force for good, I think that has to make me one of the harshest critics of waste, fraud, yeah, and corruption in government.
It's a lot different from being a state senator, one among 62. What do you like best about this job, and what's the hardest part?
The best thing about the job is the diversity of issues, and I love being back practicing law. The hardest part is I can't get my hands into everything. It's every day I have to put down a set of papers and turn to something else, and I'm traveling around the state and trying to spend a lot of time in different parts of the state just to make sure I have a feeling for the problems of everyday people all over the state. But it's a tremendous job, and I'm working hard, and I hope I can do it very, very well.
Well, again, congratulations way after the fact on your election to this job. It's a fascinating opportunity for people to make a difference. Nice to hear what you're up to in the first 8 months or so. Do you think that there's greater than 50% chance or less than 50% chance that you will bring a criminal lawsuit criminal charges in connection with the financial crisis?
I would never make a comment like that. Too early to say. If the facts warrant it, I will. If facts don't, I won't.
All right. And my producers tell me that even you, the New York State Attorney General, are going to offer a book recommendation or a music recommendation for my summer vacation, which begins after this show.
Well, I've got a couple of ideas. For music, I don't know if you've pursued this, but I've spent some time recently listening to Gaetano Veloso and Gilberto Gil, the guys from the Tropicalismo movement in Brazil. Beautiful stuff. So I highly recommend that. And for reading...
it's good beach music.
It's wonderful beach music. And for reading, I just read Manhattan Transfer by John Dos Passos. And as a student of New York and an expert on New York, if you haven't read it, you got to read it.
Eric Schneiderman, reading the classics and listening to the classics. Thank you very much. We really, really appreciate your time.
Thanks, Brian. Good to see you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And now we open up the phones for you to call in with your summer reading picks. Bring me into your world. What should I, or anybody who's going on August vacation in 15 minutes, read this summer? This is not just for me. We received song suggestions already. We'll play some of those. So call in with your recent fiction. Love to hear the recent fiction picks. And nonfiction reading endorsements. But you know I read nonfiction every day. The phones are open now. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Or post it to our website, wnyc.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show or tweet at Brian Lehrer.